How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Clazo, joined by Peter Flaherty. It's Thanksgiving week, Peter. Happy Thanksgiving.
Oh yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you, Los. It's a fun time of year. The weather up here in New England doesn't really reflect it. It's just gray and rainy and cloudy all the time, and you get like 3 hours of sunlight a day. But I do like this time of year. It's the holidays. You get to see family, and there's a lot of fun stuff going on. So I'm excited for this week and beyond.
And on today's show, you got extreme bragging rights against me because your Boston College not only defeated North Carolina this past weekend, but really ended Mac Brown's career as the head coach of UNC. They just announced he's going to not come back next year today as we record.
Yeah, as everyone thought, Boston College Eagles were the final nail in the coffin of Mac Brown's career at North Carolina. That's how everyone drew it up when he was in the Rose Bowl in 05 with Vince Young. But a rare win for the Eagles, but I'll take it. They're going bowling again, which is what we play for up here.
Yeah, so depending on when we're releasing this podcast, maybe you guys have already enjoyed your Thanksgiving, so hope it was a good one if that is the case. We're recording a little bit earlier in the week just to make sure we kind of continue our weekly cadence. But we're going to talk some NL Central draft classes today. We've got two more divisions to review in this little draft review series. It's been fun to do. We've got some good feedback on just the fact that we're actually able to take some time and review some draft classes. So it's nice that that's resonating with you guys a little bit. It's always fun for us to just kind of let the classes sit a little bit, see debuts of these players, and then maybe think through what we think about each one a little bit more, because things can just get so quickly when you jump from draft class to draft class. But we're about to wrap up the series. NL Central is up next. I guess we can go ahead and just jump straight into it, Peter, unless there's anything you want to mention or plug at the beginning of today's show.
Yeah, I got nothing. I mean, it's what we call handbook season, so it's kind of all hands on deck, finishing up our respective top 30s and cranking that out. But there's still tons of content on the site. Honestly, as a huge baseball card guy, I've selfishly loved the uptick in baseball card content that we're pushing out. So yeah. I think that there are a lot of either outward or still like under wraps baseball card fans out there. So it's like, I know I've loved seeing all the content on the site. We have a cool one of one tracker, which is tracking all of the MLB debut patches that get pulled. I know we're going to open up some more boxes with the Bowman draft one that's hugely popular and some others. So I'm fired up about that. And then our usual stream of content is normal. So there really is something for everyone, I think, on the site, especially now.
Yeah, the whole cards situation is a bit foreign to me, but it is cool just seeing the excitement that a lot of people on staff have had and just people who are into that sort of thing. So I am completely unaware of most of the happenings on the card market, but as an observer who just likes baseball, it's been fun to watch. So let's hop into some draft content. We'll start with the Cubs first. They picked 14 overall in this year's draft class and really had one of the better debuts with their first round pick. That was Cam Smith out of Florida State. It was a pretty infield heavy top of the 2024 draft for the Cubs. In the second round, they took College of Charleston third baseman Cole Mathis. In the third round, they took Miami Christian High School shortstop Ronnie Cruz. In the fourth round, they doubled up on high school shortstops with Basic High's Ty Southacine. And then in the fifth round, they took University of San Diego catcher Ariel Armas. So that's the Cubs. Cam Smith is obviously doing pretty well for himself in his debut. We'll maybe get into his performance, but just overall thoughts on the Cubs draft class, these college hitters, some high school preps in the fold, but hitter heavy at the top for Chicago this year.
Yeah, it's kind of a mixed bag. The 1-2 punch of Smith and Mathis, I think, especially aided by Smith's debut is a really solid foundation. And I know we'll talk about it a little further, but Smith, really outside of Christian Moore, unless I'm completely blanking on someone, I mean, he had
maybe Nick Kurtz, but he had a much smaller sample size prior to whatever he did in the AFL, I think. So yeah, it's in terms of like impressive numbers, it's Cam Smith and Christian Moore. I think in terms of like total bases, home runs, slug, those guys are kind of the top of the debut list.
Yeah, and I mean that big three is Kurtz, Moore, and Smith, at least for the college hitters and really hitters in general. But Smith, I know he was a consistent riser throughout the cycle, and he went at 14. There were some rumblings that he was going to go even higher. I think that the two biggest questions for him coming into the draft were surrounding his hit tool and defensive future. And the hit tool, and it's been really encouraging to see, it's consistently gotten better between, you know, year over year, and then stop to stop being like Florida State to the Cape League and then back to Florida State. And he's still a little bit susceptible to spin and expanding the zone against spin, but it has gotten better. And it's a really quiet and simple setup. Like, there's really no load at all. There's easy bat speed. He doesn't sell out to drive the baseball to all fields. He showed he can do it with wood. It's a really impressive track record with the bat. And then defensively, I might be more confident than others on his ability to stick at third base, but like, it's a comfortably plus arm. He kind of moves well over there. It's not like, you know, he's not an uber athletic guy and this kind of slick cat over there, but like, he doesn't have cinder blocks for feet. Like, there's some range there. The arm will play. I feel pretty confident in him sticking there. So,
yeah,
I mean, he's off to a really impressive start.
I think his debut is definitely the most impressive just in terms of the results, and really going back to that Cape Cod League summer they had prior to his draft eligible sophomore year, when he made some tweaks mechanically and approach wise. He's been able to maintain that approach in a full spring season with FSU. It seemed like it really translated nicely to pro ball, which was encouraging. I think there's the fact that he hit 7 home runs in his debut and just 134 plate appearances is really impressive, but I feel like there's still more in-game power kind of in the tank. If you look at like his underlying batted ball numbers, if you look at his air pull percentage specifically, it was 10.7%, which among just NL Central top 10 hitters, that was the lowest, lower than like lighter hitting middle infield types like Nick York and Sammy Stafira and JJ Weatherholt. Like, all those guys had a higher air pull percentage than he did. And his batted ball spread was fairly evenly distributed between the pole, center, and opposite fields. I'm not necessarily sure he needs to be this guy that just turns on a lot of things and hits the ball in the air. I just think, like, if he wants to do that and can sort of maintain the contact and approach he's shown while sort of balancing, trying to access more power, I think there's more in the tank, because he slaps the ball to the opposite field a lot more often than you would have expected him to do after his freshman year at FSU and as a high schooler. So he's a really intriguing hitter, just with the adjustments he's been able to show, with the contact skills he's been able to carry over to pro ball. Physically, like you said, really impressive. He's got a pro-looking body. I'll be really interested to see sort of how he evolves as a hitter, because I think there are a lot of different sort of outcomes he could have depending on what he wants to prioritize and maybe what the Cubs want to prioritize in his development.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great point about, you know, I think that there could be some more to unlock still with Smith, just depending on how they go about developing him. But regardless, it's a pretty exciting set of tools, and he's already flashed it. And the other guy, Cole Mathis, not to continue to toot our own horn, but we were on the Cole Mathis train a while ago, and it was,
I think you specifically were, so I'll give you the credit for this one.
But he overcame a slow start at Charleston and ended up hitting .335 with 14 home runs, which is a career high, 57 RBIs, which is also it was a career year for him at Charleston. But he got Tommy John surgery, so he's yet to make his pro debut. But I'm really excited about him. I know he's a right first baseman, which isn't the sexiest of profiles, but I am a real believer in the bat. Like, it's big time bat and hand speed. He's shown a knack for backspinning the baseball to all fields, especially the pull side. Did so with wood. Like, for me, it's plus power. He chased it just a 15% clip this spring while posting a 90% in zone contact rate. And I think his max EV was, 113.2 with a 90th percentile EV at 110. Like, the impact he's able to generate is no joke. So, I mean, you got to be a real believer in the bat with Mathis, just given the defensive profile. But I do think that he's going to hit enough to kind of outweigh that. And like, he's got the arm, like he has a plus arm, just plus raw arm strength, but he's not a pro third baseman. And he's also kind of intriguing on the mound, but he's not a pro arm. So, I mean, you're kind of buying the bat here, but I do think it's a really intriguing hit power combo with him.
Yeah, I think they drafted more college first basemen and as many third basemen, if you're counting Cole Mathis and either of those, as any other team. Very infield heavy. One of the infielders I want to touch on here is Ty Southesine. I think when we were doing our create a player draft last fall, I selected Ty Southesine's fielding ability for my hitter that I made. He was one of the more impressive defenders in the class. There was a handful of good defenders in this year's class, but I was curious to see if he was going to be a guy who was going to get signed or if he was going to reach campus at Tennessee. Two of Tennessee's shortstops actually got signed this year, Southesine and Trey Snyder, who we talked about on a previous draft review show. But he's just a really well-rounded, instinctual hitter. I think we compared him to Stephen Milam in our draft reports, given the size and kind of gamer mentality he's shown. Stephen Milam has already been much better than I expected him to be with LSU. We'll see what happens with him. But spending $1 million to get him in the fourth round, I think, is an interesting one. He is a little bit older for the class, so I'll be curious to see how quickly he's able to move. And really the big question with him is, what kind of impact are we looking at? Because I think he's going to be able to play multiple premium defensive positions and play them pretty well. He's got a solid batting eye, strong bat-to-ball skills, and I think if everything hits well for him, he could have like a solid leadoff type offensive role. But he's a fun high school shortstop to monitor moving forward, although we haven't seen much of him yet in pro ball. So,
yeah, I like him a lot. As you alluded to, it's a pretty impressive tool set packed into his pretty compact frame. Looking further down the Cubs draft board, the middle round pick that I really like is Ryan Gallagher out of UC Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. I really like just UC Santa Barbara arms, especially in general. I mean, I think they have a really impressive track record of development there, and it continues into pro ball. And obviously this year we've got another one with Tyler Bremner kind of headlining the college pitching class. And then, not to get too out of hand here, but 2026, they have another couple of exciting arms in Jaden Flora and Cole Triba, lefty. They're going to be, those guys are legit, especially Flora. But Ryan Gallagher, I like that pick a lot. He missed all of 2023 recovering from injury, but returned to the rotation, was excellent this year for the Gauchos. Not this ultra high upside type of arm, but I think like a pretty steady Eddie type who will be a strong number four starter potentially at the next level.
His fastball traits are really exciting. It sounds like you're about to jump into that.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's interesting. He only generated a 19% whiff on his fastball. He kind of attacks from this near over the top slot. So like, I wouldn't get too like with the, I think he averaged like 22 inches of ride on it. But like, I think a little bit of that is due to like the over the top arm slot, which can kind of fool people. Yeah. I think sometimes
it's funny. If you look at the college numbers, the IVBs that really pop at the college level are like 21, 22 inches. And then you get into pro ball and it's like 18, 19 inches. Is super impressive, because it seems like all these numbers kind of come down to earth a little bit on the pro tracking systems. I think there's just more consistency, and you can see some really loud ones in college. But either way, I think like above average riding life on that pitch, mostly like 88, 90, has touched 93. So I'll be curious to see how much velocity he's able to unlock as he gets further away from that TJ.
Yeah, I mean, there are fun traits in there with him. And I mean, he's still 21, 6'3", 195, good body with, you know, some present strength in there, especially in his lower half. But not to go off on a tangent here, but when you mentioned the vertical break numbers, it kind of tipped me off. Like, Oregon State Analytics does an awesome job, and they have a Twitter account where they tweet all this stuff out. But like, I saw some kid popped a 28 IVB this, like, that's just
like
not
a single pitch.
Yeah, that's just not. It's like he's playing skee ball, but
I don't even know how useful like a single pitch IVB number actually even is. Like, I'm not sure what the sample you need to be to actually get like a useful number, but that seems kind of crazy.
Yeah,
it was is like he throwing like underhand?
Yeah, they did like max IVB, and it was like pitch by pitch. And then gotcha. Like 28.5, 26, 25. Yeah,
I would like to see a order on average IVB. That would be interesting. I mean, that's the numbers we're typically referencing. Yeah.
28 is just not, but I give him credit though. It's posting like a TrackMan misread. They should do that with the EV with like a 130. But
there's some silly EVs in college as well.
Oh, it's nuts. But yeah, with Gallagher, it's a combination of, you know, pitchability, it's impressive strike throwing, and his field of spin. His gyro slider is really effective. It generated a 43% miss rate last year, but for me, his best pitch is his changeup.
We're talking about the fastball having this riding life, and I put the best secondary in this Cubs draft was Ryan Gallagher's slider, and then you're saying the best pitch might be the changeup. So I think just overall, we're really excited about the pure stuff he has when every single pitch we're touching on, you can talk about positively, maybe outside of like the occasional upper 70s curve he'll throw.
Yeah, I mean, his feel for spin in both of his secondaries that he relies on in his slider and changeup, I mean, you're not a stranger to it. Like, they're both really impressive. They're both at least above average, probably pushing plus. So if you can unlock a little bit more miss with the fastball, you know, I think you have a really impressive arm here on your hands. And you combine that with the strike throwing, it's going to help everything play up, I think, and his ability to locate. So I was a fan of that pick as well.
Yeah, one pick further down the board I wanted to touch on is Daniel Avidia in the 12th round. This was a guy who we had ranked in like day one or really early day two range entering the spring. He was one of the better command pitchers in the class, just a lot of confidence in a starter track record. He threw a ton of innings at Grand Canyon, but had this really unique sort of arsenal and release point. He throws from a lower arm slot that's gets down to like fully sidearm at times, sits in the upper 80s, scrapes like a 94, 95 occasionally, but it's like a light throwing horizontal movement profile with a fastball with a lot of arm side movement, a changeup, a slurvy breaking ball. And like none of these pitches ever looked like above average or plus offerings in a vacuum, but he was just really effective with how he attacked hitters. The command was really impressive. And then he just kind of backed up during his draft year. And I think given the fact that he's a right-handed thrower who has that sort of velocity, there are a lot of real question marks, but if he's able to sort of get back to the 2023 version of Avidia, if he can add a little bit more power, he's interesting. And for $150,000 in the 12th round, it's definitely an arm I'm intrigued by. Maybe like a post-hype sort of development path with him could be fun to watch. And then Eli Lovich in the 11th round, he signed for $650,000. So he is their big day three signing. Really athletic player, outfielder, left-handed pitcher, two-way guy at the draft. I talked to some guys who liked him better on the mound, actually, but he's drafted as an outfielder. So he'll be an interesting guy to see like kind of what he turns into offensively.
Yeah, I liked your point about Avidia. And I mean, he came into last year with a ton of fanfare around him. He had a really good summer on the Cape. I think he had a sub 2 ERA, had a really productive summer with Orleans, but like you said, it's no doubt it strikes over stuff. I think the one pitch I'd give like a 55 or better to is probably his changeup. I don't think it's like a bona fide plus changeup, but it does flash and it helps and it plays well from that arm slot. And I think that his stuff in general will play much better against wood than it will metal. Like, I think just that type of any arm stuff will play better against wood than I think metal, but he's an advanced strike thrower, kind of a back of the rotation arm, depending on how you want to use him. But like you said, I mean, he had like top five round potential buzz coming into 24 and where they snagged him in the 12th round, and it was relatively cheap. I think you have to be really happy with that. And then another arm day three that I really liked, or I wouldn't say really liked, but is at least intriguing, is Hayden Frank from, Lipscomb. His season was kind of abbreviated last year due to, injuries, but he came back, threw the ball well, and then had a strong showing on the Cape, just an interesting profile, southpaw, fastball. He throws strikes. There's some stuff there, especially in his breaking ball. The field of spin's pretty impressive. So it's another guy whose secondaries are his calling card, but a day three arm that I liked a lot.
Cool. All right, let's move into the Reds for our second team here. They're picking second overall. So regardless of who wound up on the board, there was a chance that they're going to get just a ton of upside with that pick. They go with Right-handed pitcher Chase Burns out of Wake Forest. Second year in a row, they take a Wake Forest right-handed pitcher. He joins Rhett Lauder in the organization now. And kind of the debates we've been having the offseason about who do we prefer, Chase Burns or Rhett Lauder, has been a fun one because they're such different pitchers, but equally exciting. In the second round, they took Millard West High School shortstop Tyson Lewis. In the supplemental second, they took right-handed pitcher Luke Holman out of LSU. In the third round, they took Northeastern outfielder Mike Sirota. In the fourth round, they took Arkansas second baseman Peyton Stovall. And then in the fifth round, they took left-handed pitcher Tristan Smith out of Clemson. So aside from Lewis, pretty college-heavy. I think a lot of, I'd mentioned post-hype for Daniel Avidia, but I think a majority of the players we just mentioned here, at least three of the six, are sort of like post-hype college players that you could have easily seen them going higher than where they were selected with better or at least more consistent college careers. Like Mike Sirota was a guy we raved about a year ago. He entered as a top half of the first round, top 10 sort of talent in the class, and just really didn't take a step forward and struggled out of the gate and slid to the third round. Like if just imagine us hearing that he was going to be a third rounder last year, Peter, we would have been either thrilled with that pick or terrified that something horrible happened to Mike Sirota. So if he can kind of figure things out and add a little bit more impact, I think it's a really well-rounded profile still. Stovall, Tristan Smith, just a little bit more consistency in their college careers. I like things they do. And then Luke Holman, especially in this draft class, I'm kind of stunned that Luke Holman lasted to 71, just given his performance in the SEC. I know there are a lot of these SEC pitchers that either didn't have the sort of performance that scouts wanted to see given their stuff. I'm thinking of guys like Ben Hess, maybe in that tier, and then Luke Holman, maybe the inverse, where he was posting pretty consistently in the SEC, moved into the Friday night starter role for LSU fairly quickly. But then there's just some skepticism about like how loud is the pure stuff with him. I always thought the fastball and breaking ball combinations were pretty effective. There's good shape on the fastball. So I kind of like the value of a lot of these picks. And then you're looking at Chase Burns, who they paid as tied for the biggest bonus in the class, new record bonus at $9.25 million. Along with Charlie Condon. So a lot to talk about here, but what are your thoughts on this draft class?
I guess when focusing solely on the top five rounds, at least to start, I really like the foundation that the Reds built. Obviously, it starts with Chase Burns. We've talked about him at length now.
Who I barely mentioned, actually, in my breakdown. But yeah, it does start with him.
From a stuff standpoint, in last year's draft, I mean, he was unmatched. It's three, at least six or better pitches with his fastball and slider grading out of 70s. You could even, I mean, if you catch him on the right day, you could even stick a 70 on the curveball, and then he's also turned over a handful of quality changeups. Like, from a stuff standpoint, he's unmatched. So he's got rotation headliner upside without a doubt, and I'm excited to see him make his pro debut this year. Luke Holman, though, as you said, I think that was great value in a great spot to snag him. I mean, where they
there
got
was this
him,
like the second or third tier of college arms, really after Trey Savage went off the board. I was like, there are going to be a lot of college pitchers who are going up here just because there's not a lot of options available. And a few did. And then Holman is lasting like a full round deeper than that. That was stunning to me. I thought for sure he was going to go supplemental round or early second. It's like 30 picks after that.
Yeah. And I mean, they got him with their third pick. Like you said, it's not like the craziest arsenal of stuff, but I'm a fan. Like, the fastball's up to 95, average over 19 inches of ride last year. There's life at the top of the zone. Like, it's not a stock fastball. I mean,
uses it well. Like, I felt like he did a really nice job of attacking north and then using his secondaries at the bottom of the zone. And like, we didn't have anything as plus on our report, but I just think everything plays pretty well. I mean, maybe we just have him overranked and I saw him good and I'm too bullish on him, but yeah, I find myself really liking this pick, even though like pre-draft I wouldn't have talked about Luke Holman as positively, because like a lot of the reason I like this is just where he was at on the board.
Yeah, no, and I think like it's such an old adage in baseball, but it does apply here. Like, he does change eye levels well. He knows how to pitch. I mean, the slider is also, for me at least, an above average offering. He manipulates its shape well. Last year I think it had a 48% whiff. And then his changeup is a bigger and also an effective off-speed offering. And then his changeup is fine for a fourth pitch. So, I mean, I think if you're the Reds, and I'm sure that they are, like, you have to be thrilled that he was still on the board at 71 and to scoop him there. And I think that the biggest wild card might be Mike Sirota. Like, he had, at least from a buzz standpoint and an up arrow standpoint, like, he was one of the like biggest helium guys, at least on the college side. I think coming into last year, like us included, people were talking about how he had, you know, top 10 potential. He could have been the highest draft pick in Northeastern history, including Carlos Pena. And he didn't quite perform up to, like, I give him credit. Like, he could have gotten buried and kind of let everything snowball out of control. Mm-hmm. But he did pick it up towards the end of the year and hit it just a tick under 300 with 16 doubles and 17 jacks. Stole 19 bases. I think that the biggest concern with him in pro ball is just going to be how much impact can he get to. Mm-hmm. I do like the body a lot, though. He's 6'3", 190, this wiry athlete, super, super athletic kid. Like, there are tools there. He's got a good feel to hit. He's got quick hands, plus runner. I think that the speed and athleticism combo is going to give him a chance to stick in center field, which is really appealing. It's just like, how much power can he get to? I think right now it's like a 45, but it's kind of one of those bodies where it's like, do you want to put on like 10 to 15 pounds and mm-hmm. potentially move him off of center field and, you know, make the plus run closer to an above? Like, it's an interesting debate, but like, I think that the tools with him are exciting enough. And what he did last year at Northeastern is not necessarily indicative of who he actually is as a hitter. So, mm-hmm. I'm excited to see him make his debut.
Yeah. I'll just touch on Tyson Lewis really quick. Their second rounder, just get a rare little prepster in the midst of these college players, but really athletic, kind of toolsy high school shortstop. It was a really good year for Nebraska for high school players, just between just Tyson Lewis and Cale Fountain, to be honest. Both got really good results in the draft, just in terms of bonuses. I don't remember off the top of my head exactly where Cale Fountain went, but the Padres signed him to a pretty big overslot deal, if I'm remembering correctly. But either way, a really good runner. I think he's got a nice power speed combination, chance to stick at shortstop. Early this spring, he made some nice adjustments to the swing. It was a little bit simpler, a little bit easier. He previously had an arm bar that he kind of got rid of, and just the swing came out. I think at PBR Super 60 Showcase, he looked really good from just a physicality, like an athletic testing standpoint. And then the swing was just a little bit simpler and looser and easier. And I think you could dream on him as a hitter a little bit more after that. And then pairing that with just the pretty solid physical tool set. Like, we have him as an average or better at really every tool. And it sounds like JJ has heard some good reviews from him inside the Red system after signing as well. So that's an interesting, like, maybe a little more upside high school shortstop pick. And then another name I like in this draft class is eighth rounder Luke Hayden, right-handed pitcher out of Indiana State. He was going to be committed to LSU if he didn't sign. Is that correct, Peter?
Yep.
But he was a standout at the draft combine for me. One of the, I'd say, more impressive pitchers. We wrote about him on day two. He was alongside guys like Ryan Andrade and Grant Shepherdson, one of the more impressive bullpens. I think he showed like a five pitch mix, was sitting 95, 96 in that session, riding life, cutting life. He's got an actual cutter, slider, curveball, a changeup. And he had pitched as a starter and a reliever in his career with Indiana and Indiana State. Made four relief appearances in his pro debut with low A Daytona, and pitched pretty well, five innings, six strikeouts, two walks. So he's an interesting arm that I was really impressed with. Like the way he moves on the mound. I like the diversity of the pitch mix. And I don't know if like the debut is just telling that he's going to be used as a reliever moving forward, but I thought just the amount of quality pitches I saw, I was curious if he would get a shot in a starter role, but either way, I like the arm.
Yeah, I'm happy you brought up Hayden because he's kind of my day two pick to click for him. And you kind of echoed the sentiment I was. He moves really well on the mound. It's impressive stuff. Fastball slider combination is pretty lethal. I think the only question with him is where he's going to end up. I think he's probably best in a bullpen role, but we'll see how they use him going forward. But regardless, like, I think that's a pretty fun arm that they got. And then circling back just to the fifth round, I like Tristan Smith from Clemson a pretty good bit coming into the year. He's another guy with kind of reliever questions. I'm curious to see how the pitchability progresses, but from a stuff standpoint, it's also impressive. Like, fastball's been up to 95 with life, or 96 with plenty of life through the zone. He's got a kind of funky and naturally deceptive delivery in which it's pretty up tempo. Little bit of drop and drive in there. Changeup and slider will both really flash, especially his slider. So good bones with Smith, and I'm curious to kind of see again how they use him. They're going to give him a chance to start, I would assume, at least early on. But yeah, I really like this Reds class just looking through it. I think there are a lot of exciting guys, especially on the mound. It's hard to not be excited about that, you know, Chase Burns, Luke Holman, Tristan Smith, Luke Hayden. And we can keep going. Like, that's a really solid group that they got.
So Rhett Lauder made his major league debut on August 30th. What is your over under on Chase Burns making his major league debut? Are you going to take the under on that August 30th date? So that's basically like a year and a half month after being drafted. I don't even know when exactly he signed, but that might be less than a year after or a year exactly that he signed, depending on, it's like a year and a month, basically.
That's a great hypothetical.
So the difference is obviously, I think, well, maybe not for everybody, but I think Rhett Lauder is a better pure pitcher with better command and control. Chase Burns has a long track record of throwing high quality strikes, and he has undoubtedly better pure stuff and I would say more pure upside. But I could see both of them moving quickly, and I think Burns is going to be like the fastest moving guy in this draft class. I'm not sure that's too much of a hot take, but I think like the over under on that one is fascinating. I think he can move pretty quickly. I'll take the over and say he does not debut as quickly as Lauder.
I was going to say the same thing. I don't think it's as quick as Lauder, but I do think that it's going to be a 2025 debut. I think it'll just come a little bit later, but like you said, he's got the profile of someone that's going to absolutely fly through the system and be one of the quicker movers in the entire class. So, I'm very curious to see how aggressive they are in assigning him. And then also we'll get a feel for how quickly they're going to move him, with just his trajectory and path. So, I'm kind of fascinated to see what they do with him.
Cool. All right, let's move into our next team. That's the Milwaukee Brewers. They had a ton of extra picks this year. They picked 17th overall in the first round and took high school outfielder Braylon Payne. In the supplemental second round at pick 34, they took Tennessee first baseman Blake Burke. In the second round, they took right-handed pitcher Bryce Message out of the Pennington School in New Jersey. In the second supplemental round at 67, they took right-handed pitcher Chris Lavonis out of Christian Brothers Academy, also in New Jersey. He was one of four players to not sign inside the top 10 rounds. Maybe shook up this draft class a little bit because of that. In the third round, they took Dallas Baptist right-handed pitcher Jaron DeBerry. In the fourth round, they took FSU catcher Marco Dingus. And then in the fifth round, they took right-handed pitcher John Holobetz out of Old Dominion. So a number of players here, top five rounds with those two extra picks. It may be one of the more surprising first round picks for me, certainly on draft day, like seeing Braylon Payne get popped at 17. He was not a name that I had heard a ton in the middle of the first round entering the day. We had him ranked sort of in the second round range. He was kind of alongside PJ Morlando as two guys that maybe were a little surprising given where we had him ranked, but certainly in terms of like historical shockers in the first round, not one of the craziest ones. I think he fits as a day one talent. He's a really good athlete and fast runner. But what are your thoughts on what Milwaukee did?
Yeah, and I think that Milwaukee is one of the organizations, when you look at the picks that they make, especially the pitchers that they select, and you'll kind of go, and dig in a little bit further. So I guess just starting with the first college bat with Blake Burke, I was a little surprised that he went at 34. But again, I think if you're any organization, you can get him with your second pick, which was where he was going to profile anyways. Like, he wasn't going to last, obviously, until their third pick. So
yeah,
that's a smart guy to jump on and snag. And from a raw power standpoint, and this is including Jack Caglione, like, he can go toe-to-toe with anyone in this class, Burke. And like, it's comfortably 70 grade raw. I think he posted a max EV last year of 117. He's not a metal bat merchant type, but I think with him, what goes underrated and a little bit undersold is his hit ability. Like, I mean, the bat to ball skills are plus. It was a 92% in zone contact rate last year.
It is similar to Cags, because it's power, it's a lot of contact, it's just like an aggressive approach and aggressive swing decisions.
Yeah, I mean, he's not gonna waste any pitches in the box. Like, you know, he's got quickness in his hands, there's feel for the barrel. I think he's gonna be able to get to that impact pretty consistently. So I'm excited to see what he does in his pro debut. And then with John Holobetz, I think there's like, he's a pretty fun and intriguing ball of clay, like kind of a classic Brewers-ish pick. Like, I think that there's stuff that you can develop. Like, none of the whiff rates and nothing that you look at least on the surface with Holubits, are that, like, I guess, standout-ish. At Old Dominion, it was rather modest. It was a 4.3 ERA, just 52 Ks in 62 innings. But fastball up to 95 with 19 inches of ride through the zone, kind of a, like, you know, particular life at the top. Gyro slider's effective, and so is his changeup. I'm just really curious to see how they develop the stuff and optimize the shapes with Holubits. And I also think that, you know, frame-wise, you can get him a little more physical and all that. But Jerron DeBerry, I guess, in a similar breath from Dallas Baptist, like, Ryan Johnson got a ton of love on that stat on the staff, and rightfully so. But with DeBerry, like, his field of spin is his calling card, like his sweeper and curveball. They're two distinct shapes. And then his fastball is up to 94 with riding life. Like, stuff wise, it's really, really fun and kind of a classic Brewers pick. Like, I think he has all the makings of kind of, like, you know, potentially one of the next pop up arms, at least in that system. So those are two college arms that I'm really intrigued by.
Yeah, this draft class stands out for Milwaukee too, because they took a lot of high school right-handed pitchers, and that's a demographic where some teams are just more willing to shy away from and let those guys go to college and prove it. Now, I mean, Chris Lavonis is going to get to college at Wake Forest, despite the fact that the Brewers drafted him and wanted to sign him. But just starting with Bryce Message, he was one of the eight high school right-handed pitchers that the Brewers drafted, again, more than anyone else. I think we had tied the Brewers to a lot of these really high spin prep righties with this specific, not with this specific pick, actually the pick that Blake Burke went with at 34. Guys like Braylon Doty, guys like William Schmidt. I think I'd had them at different picks. I never had Bryce Message specifically with the Brewers, but I think this one makes a lot of sense just given how the team has valued the ability to spin a breaking ball. He has multiple breaking balls that got above average or plus grades between his slider and his curveball. Both of those pitches had spin rates north of 2,800 RPMs. He's touched 96 miles per hour. He's fairly young for the class. He's got a great projectable frame at 6'4", 210 pounds. And he also has some professional bloodlines. His father pitched at Iowa and was drafted by the Dodgers in 1998. So that's a really intriguing pick. Chris Lavonis would have been a fun player to talk through as well had he signed. Not getting that one done is probably a bit of a bummer. He's another guy that would have been I imagine a near 2 million sort of signing. We had him ranked in a similar range, and they were both actually seeing where they wound up on our list will be interesting here, because I remember just really going back and forth between who would rank higher, Lavonis or Message. They were tricky to separate. We had him, let's see, Lavonis we had at 74 and Message we had at 71. So I imagine they would have signed for relatively similar slot.
Yeah, and I think with Lavonis, like you said, that's a bummer. I'm really excited to see how he does develop at Wake Forest, though. Obviously, just given their track record with pitching, from a stuff standpoint, he was one of the more impressive high school arms. Yeah, I'm excited to follow him going forward. But the day three arm that I kind of had pegged is a really intriguing one. And, like, I think that there is plenty of clay here, especially for the Brewers, is Tyson Harden from Mississippi State. Again, two pitch guy, fastball, slider, reliever all the way, but some outlier traits with his heater. He's up to 96 from a really low release height. I think his average release height on it was 5'4" last year with above average spin. It's got life through the zone. It's a really tough and kind of funky look for hitters. He's a good athlete on the mound. He supplements it with this power slider that I think, like, it's flashed at Mississippi State. He didn't throw it a whole lot. He relied really heavily on his heater, but I think that's going to be a fun pitch for the Brewers to develop, because it's kind of this, like, power sweeper look at times. And, like, I think he's got a chance to have a, like, kind of that plus 1-2 pitch combo. Again, it's reliever all the way, so you can't really get crazy excited about it, but, like, I think for a day three guy, you know, they signed him for really cheap. I have a feeling that they're really excited about that, especially just given their developmental chops.
Yeah, day three for the Brewers is maybe more interesting than any other team in this year's draft, just given the failure to sign Lavonis and the flurry of late, I think, like signing deadline day deals for the Brewers. They had a handful of guys who signed for big money on the third day, presumably because that deal with Lavonis fell through. They signed Joseph Broughton, a left-handed pitcher out of Michigan, for $535,000. They signed Travis Smith for $462,000. They signed Jaden Dubinowitz for $665,000. And then Tyler Renz is the guy I really wanted to talk about here. 18th rounder. He signed for $850,000. Significant bonus for a day three type. And the first line of our report basically screams Brewers pick in hindsight. And now that he actually is a Brewers pick, but we wrote a 6'4", 190-pound right-hander, Renz will appeal to many analytically inclined teams thanks to the combination of his size, age, and spin characteristics. He was 17.7 on draft day. Great frame that you can project a lot of strength moving forward. He spins the ball really well. Basically, you just need to add some strength, add some power. It's mostly low 90s now, but clearly he's a guy that the Brewers believe in, given that signing bonus that he commanded, and just is a nice fit with this organization. So that's kind of a fun one on day three as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like we alluded to at the start of the Brewers, really anyone they pick, especially in the mound, like it'll kind of prompt you to dig a little bit deeper and what did they see. And I think that there are plenty of arms here that fit the mold for kind of classic Brewers pick. So I think that there are going to be a handful of guys that they really do a good job of developing.
Yeah. And maybe just circling back to Braylon Payne really quickly, since he was their first rounder, and maybe a bit of a surprise pick that I was a little I was kind of questioning a little bit at the time, but he did have a really strong debut, even though it was pretty brief, just 19 plate appearances, but he hit .438, .526, .625. Stole four bases, and the underlying exit velocity data he showed was already more impressive than I would have expected from a still fairly skinny, kind of speed-oriented player. But I did see him kind of let his hands loose at times, and he's got some thump in the barrel. So I'll be curious to see what his exit velocity and power, just what the impact is going to look like for him over the course of a larger sample in pro ball. But certainly an encouraging, albeit very brief, start for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
When creating your own business, the most important part is your ideas. So why let the headache of registering your business hold those ideas back? It's time to learn about a great idea that will keep you going and growing, LegalZoom. LegalZoom has everything you need to launch, run, and protect your business all in one place. Setting up your business properly and remaining compliant are things you want to get right from the get-go, but you don't have to strain your brain or wallet. LegalZoom saves you from wasting hours making sense of the legal stuff. At LegalZoom.com, you can take care of business legal needs in just a few clicks. And if you need some hands-on help, their network of experienced attorneys from around the country has your back. Over the last 20 years, LegalZoom helped start, run, and protect millions of businesses. LegalZoom, now you're in business. Launch, run, and protect your business to make it official today at LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL to get 10% off any LegalZoom business formation product, excluding subscriptions and renewals. Expires 12/31/24. Get everything you need from setup to success at LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL. LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL. Disclaimer, LegalZoom provides access to independent attorneys and self-service tools. LegalZoom is not a law firm and does not provide legal advice except where authorized through its subsidiary law firm, LZ Legal Services, LLC.
This time of year, a good hoodie is absolutely essential. But these days, it's tough to find one that will last through the season. That's why the American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime, so you can count on it to bring you comfort and warmth year after year. Slate Magazine called it the greatest hoodie ever made, and from cotton to zipper, it's made right here in the USA. It's crafted with timeless style, heavyweight fleece, a double-lined hood, and reinforced elbow patches, which means this hoodie can withstand any outing or adventure. It'll be your new favorite hoodie, and you can depend on it for years to come. Plus, buying from American Giant means supporting local communities of farmers, manufacturers, and more. This season, snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life, the American Giant Classic Full Zip, and save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use code CLASSIC24 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code CLASSIC24.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Cool. All right, let's move on to the Pirates. They were picking 9th overall. They went with Connor Griffin, shortstop, outfielder, right-handed pitcher. He was selected as a shortstop out of Jackson Prep School. In the supplemental first round at 37, they took Levi Sterling out of Notre Dame High School in California. With their second round pick, they took high school shortstop Wyatt Sanford out of Independence High in Texas. In the third round, they took Wake Forest left-handed pitcher Josh Hartle. In the fourth round, they took high school shortstop Eddie Reinders out of Wisconsin Lutheran High. And in the fifth round, they took outfielder Will Taylor out of Clemson. So a strong mix of different profiles here. A lot of high school players for the Pirates, which I'm particularly intrigued with. They got one of the biggest upside plays in the draft class at number 9 with Connor Griffin. I don't remember what our final mock was with the Pirates, but I know his name was linked to them pretty consistently. Maybe he was one of like the 4 that I got right in the final version, but unsurprising that he went in that range and to the Pirates. And I really like the Levi Sterling and Wyatt Sanford picks in particular. Sterling just checks so many boxes as a high school pitcher between the frame, the ease to his delivery, his youth, the control, it's a 4-pitch mix. Like he's just a really appealing package of tools and skills. Wyatt Sanford maybe doesn't have the sort of offensive upside that you're getting with Connor Griffin, but he was one of the best defensive players in this draft class overall, high school or college. Like if you watch him take in and out, he just looks like a pro shortstop right now. He hit pretty well this spring, was one of the more prominent up arrow Texas hitters on the season. So I like that. And then we can get into some more players down the board, but it's an easy class to dream on here for the Pirates is what I'll say. But what do you have on it, Peter?
Yeah, upside wise, I mean, it's really, really exciting. And it starts with the two guys at the top with Griffin and Sterling on either side of the baseball. Griffin, it's an up the middle profile. It's just a matter of where. But I mean, there's legit 5-tool upside with him, plus arm, plus run. It's just a matter of how much is he going to be able to hit. I think that's the biggest question mark with him. But I mean, as tooled out a player as you'll find, I think, in the entire class. And like you said, with Sterling, that was one of the high school arms that I really liked a lot. Like, I mean, you nailed it. Like, he's a projectable kid, impressive body control, fastball to 94 with life. But there's, I think, plenty more in the tank with him. And his high spin curveball is a really effective off-speed offering right now. But he also will mix in a slider.
I think he's one of those pitchers where you watch him throw and it's just super easy to really like him. It's just such a buttery, smooth, repeatable, balanced delivery. Like everything just looks like it comes super easy to him on the mound. And then he's constantly spotting up. I don't know off the top of my head how many high school pitchers or pitchers overall we put plus command grades on, but he was one of them. I'll pull up that list and just see if there are a handful of others, but I can't imagine there are more than like 2 that we put plus on. So yeah, plus control. We gave Cash Mayfield, Levi Sterling, and William Kirk plus control grades. Everyone else was 55 or lower of the 200 that we put grades on. So that's a pretty prized trait for me on the high school pitching front.
Yeah. And I mean, it really does look like he's playing catch. Like there's such an ease to his operation that I think is really, really appealing. And I think that one of the biggest wild cards, at least in this class, is Josh Hartle and like what he kind of looks like when he's maxed out. Like he backed up a little bit last year at Wake Forest. It wasn't really a secret. Got hit around a little bit. Strikeout numbers weren't really there. I think with him, it's plus control. He can spot up. Like the location wasn't this like solo cup type control that it was in 23. I'm curious to see just how the stuff develops. For me, the cutter is his best pitch in his arsenal. At a 55, he's got 2 different breaking balls in there. Fastball is just up to 93. I'm just kind of curious to see how effective he can be at the next level and getting pro hitters out. Obviously, you want to like him. I mean, he's a 6'5 lefty, starter traits. He's already a plus strike thrower. I'm just kind of curious to see how he's gonna like. if you can get pro hitters out. Yeah. And I
feel like I cursed him this entire draft cycle because every single time I was watching him and he didn't have the most like impressive starts like he did in 2023 and in 2024. So maybe this is just more of the norm for him. But I remember watching him with Team USA. I think I saw his worst outing with them last summer and he was just getting barreled consistently. And then early in the season with Wake Forest, again, same thing. Like he just couldn't get in the zone because every time he was in the zone, he was getting hammered. So whether it's just adding a little bit of velo or just getting back to the command he had 2023 where he can more effectively mix and match and hit his spots on the edges of the zone. I have a lot more question marks now with Hartle because it's not just like 1 year of getting hit around. Really, it's his 2023 season that is more of the outlier now when you're looking at his Wake Forest career. And he never really added the sort of fastball velocity that you wanted to see from a lefty with a pretty easy delivery and a 6'5", lean 200-pound frame. So maybe there's more to be unlocked there with him, but I think the pre-spring assumption of Josh Hartle was he was this no doubt number five starter at the major league level, and now there are questions about whether he'll be able to get to that sort of role. So definitely some questions with him, but still some traits to like with the pitch mix and the command.
Yeah, and I mean, not to, I guess to focus on the good here, I mean, you've got a 6'5 left-handed starter, the strike throwing is appealing, he's got a five-pitch mix. There's plenty to get your hands on and develop. It's just like, what really is the ceiling here? And his pro debut is a little underwhelming. It's really hard to hold any, like, he just had a bad appearance. Went an inning in 2/3, 5 hits, 3 earned runs, walked a guy. I hope that it's not a harbinger of what's to come, but we'll see. The day two arm though that I do really like is Connor Vischer.
Oh, I thought you were going with UC Santa Barbara on this one. I know.
I like Vischer too. I think that Wickriff though is obviously more slept on than Vischer. Vischer came into 24 with kind of this potential day one upside, a little bit like Hartle didn't quite have the season that people were expecting him to have, but there's still plenty to like there with him. But with Wickriff, I liked him dating back to, and I know it's so easy to say now, but I liked him dating back to his 2023 summer in the Northwoods League where he struck out 31 and 18 and 2/3 innings, went back and did it again at Minnesota this year, and then had a really strong stint on the Cape that I was fortunate to witness at least one start. Yeah, I caught him once with Bourne and across 11 innings, struck out 12, walked just one, and allowed just one earned run. And right now he's kind of he's not a two pitch guy. He doesn't only throw two pitches, but fastball slider are kind of his bread and butter, and it has the makings of this effective east west profile. His fastball has been up to 95 with some natural run to the arm side. Slider's his go-to breaking ball. He'll throw it to both left and right-handed hitters, but he's got an impressive feel for it. He'll manipulate its shape. He'll kind of make it this two planer back foot type pitch against righties, and then it's longer and sweepier against lefties. It gets swings and misses. I think the key for him going forward though is just developing a third offering. I think that the easy pitch to hone in on is refining his changeup and getting that to where it needs to be, even if it's just an average third pitch that he can dump in and kind of a little bit of change of pace, especially against right-handed hitters. I think that would go a long way, but he had an impressive pro debut too. I mean, he made five appearances, four of which were starts, allowed one run across 10 innings, struck out 13 and walked just a pair. So that's a guy I think to be pretty excited about.
Yeah, agreed.
And there's one more.
One I'll mention is, I mean, most of the pitchers we talked about are more of this command and control, a little bit lighter fastball profiles. Not sure if that was like a specific pitching target the Pirates had, just these guys that you feel good about their control and maybe you can add a little bit more velocity moving forward. It certainly seems the case on the surface, but Gavin Adams is not a pitcher who fits that profile at all. I think just purely in a vacuum, he has the most exciting fastball of the group. I was really excited to see him pitch with Florida State last spring after transferring in from junior college. We didn't get to see that happen. He had TJ before the season. I don't think he threw an inning with the program, but he had a fastball that's kind of consistently in the upper 90s. He's been up to 101 miles per hour. There's a slider in there that's been solid as well, just given the power of that pitch. There are a lot more questions about his control, command, strike throwing ability, starter reliever profile than a lot of the other pitchers we mentioned, but I feel like if he was healthy, he had a chance to really boost his draft stock this spring, just given the pure arm talent. And so in the eighth round for $172,000, $175,000 with the signing bonus contingency, I just really like this arm talent here and hope he can get back to being healthy and show similar stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so happy you hit on Adams because that's where I was going next. But he has a chance to be an absolute monster. Like, he's got a great body. He's up to 101 in his final fall outing with Florida State. I think just the fastball command and getting that, you know, polishing that up is going to be such a key for him. Mm-hmm. And like you said, the fastball slider combo is legit. Like, the slider will really flash. It's just getting to it consistently. And I think that, you know, he's got the potential for a quality third pitch in his changeup. I know that during the fall at Florida State, it showed really well. Mm-hmm. In flash plus, it kind of will just dive out of the zone really, really late and be an effective swing and miss pitch. He threw it to righties as well. Just this super, super high ceiling. It's just like the strikes and getting to that thunderous stuff consistently are the two big question marks. And then in the 13th round, an arm that I was a fan of the pick was Matt McShane from St. Joe's. Had a good year at St. Joe's, bullpen guy, but across 43 innings collected 57 Ks, fastball up to 96, averaged almost 21 inches a ride through the zone, and then he paired it with a really effective gyro slider that worked I think it was a 44% whiff rate. Mm-hmm. But again, reliever profile, but I was a fan of the pick on day three.
Yeah, that's a good one. One last player that I'll mention just so he doesn't get kind of pushed under the radar, but Eddie Rinders, I think just given the other high school shortstops in this class who are more prominent and some of the other more famous names in the class. I talked to some scouts in the spring who really liked him quite a bit. I don't know that he was like a consensus day two guy. We ranked him like right in the early 300s on our board, but there were some scouts who certainly liked him quite a bit more than that. He's got an impressive frame. He's got solid raw power and strength, and those highest on his swing thought he had a chance to be like a solid average or better pure hitter. So keep him in mind moving forward as well, and don't let him get like lost in the shuffle of maybe some of these more prominent names around him.
Yeah. And I guess continuing with the theme of like not getting lost in the shuffle, Matt Agere, I think, is an important arm to bring up. It's a little bit similar to Hartle and like came into 2024 with plenty of fanfare, day one profile. Just didn't really find it, I guess, at Santa Barbara. It wasn't as bad of a year as Hartle. It was still, I'd say it was just modest. Mm-hmm. ERA a tick over 4, 59 Ks and 62 innings. Kind of bounced around between the rotation and the bullpen and eventually settled into the bullpen. Fastball up to 95 with some life at the top. The slider will flash above average. And then it'll also mix in a curveball that's a distinct shape from the slider. He doesn't throw it as much, but it's bigger in shape. So, I think that trying to get him back to that 2023 form, and if they can get him back to that 2023 form, is going to be key because he was excellent at Santa Barbara, showed well at USA. There's an appealing ease to his delivery. He's a polished strike thrower. But again, we're like, if you know, getting him in the sixth round, I think you have to be really happy with it. And then I guess in the fifth round, Will Taylor, had tons of first round buzz coming out of high school, turned down multi-million-dollar deal, and then opted to play football for his first 2 years at Clemson. He's an excellent athlete. There's some pull side juice there. Plenty of tools packed into his rather compact frame. I think for me, it's just like, how much is he going to be able to hit, and can he get to that impact consistently with Wood? But certainly a fun player to follow.
Yeah. Let's move into our final team here with the Cardinals, who have maybe one of the biggest steals of the draft class for me. And that's with their first overall pick at 7 overall, getting JJ Weatherholt at that pick, shortstop out of West Virginia. We had him ranked number 3 in the class. I viewed him as a potential 1-1 candidate. His name certainly came up a lot with the Guardians at 1. He slid much further down the board than I would have expected him to. So the Cardinals, I know they were thrilled to get him there in that spot. They did not have a second round pick. In the third round, they took right-handed pitcher Ryan Holiday out of Oklahoma State. In the fourth round, they took Arizona State catcher Ryan Campos. And then in the fifth round, they took Oklahoma left-handed pitcher Braden Davis. The Cardinals seem to prioritize a lot of hitters who can control the strike zone. A lot of their guys, Weatherholt, Campos, John Gasdar later in the draft, 18th rounder Christian Martin, all of these guys walk a lot. They don't strike out a ton. They have really savvy approaches and batting eyes. Obviously, J.J. Weatherholtz was one of the best in the overall class. He showed that in his pro debut. But yeah, what are your thoughts on the Cardinals, J.J. Weatherholtz, any other players you want to get into?
Yeah, I mean, when we'll touch on the favorite classes at the end, not to spoil it, but I do really like where the Cardinals went in their draft. I think Weatherholtz, it helps that I think both you and I are huge fans of him. Like, from a pure hit tool standpoint, I mean, he's right there with Bizzana, can go toe-to-toe with Bizzana in terms of who's got the best hit tool in the 2024 class. But there's also impact and a knack to drive the baseball to all fields. Like, if he can get the...
I think you... I want to, like, try and highlight this in the podcast if I can, because I do think that whether it's because of his stature or just his pure hitting ability, like the reputation as a pure hitter, I think people maybe do sleep on just how much juice Weatherholt has in his hands. He's strong for his size. There's plenty of thunder in the hands and the wrists, and it's with wood and with metal. I mean, his exit velocities were solid. In pro ball, he showed really impressive impact with Team USA with wood. I think there are going to be a lot of people who are maybe surprised by how much power he hits for. It's not the same sort of, like, optimized pulled angles in the air that Bizzana has now. He might not ever be that sort of hitter, but he does have power that I think people should maybe put some respect on. It it's pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, and I'm happy you brought it up, it's with wood too. I mean, it's legit all fields impact with Weatherholtz, and I'm curious, you know, if they go the route of kind of emphasizing getting the ball up in the air more of the pull side, or just kind of letting him do his thing at the plate. I kind of err on the latter. Like, I mean, it's a really impressive hit power combo as is. He's consistently on the barrel. It's consistent, high quality contact. It's electric hand speed. The barrel just flies through the zone. And it's as hitterish a look as I think you can find in the box. And then digging a little bit further into the other facets of Weatherholtz's game. And I think that this is a big key to his profile, is he's a comfortably plus runner and he's a really effective base dealer. I think what hindered him dating back to the summer of 2023 was he kind of had a nagging hamstring injury that carried over a little bit into 2024. So him staying healthy and on the field is key going forward and is just going to help him maximize his profile. But I mean, man, the hit power combo at the plate is special is a really, I think, bullish label to put on anything, but it is really, really impressive. Like, for me, it's plus hit, it's 55 power, but it's to all fields. Impressive field of backspin the baseball. I mean, we could go on and on about, you know, Weatherholtz hit ability, and I think
I mean, we put some people might think this is a cop-out grade, but we had two hitters in this draft class who had 65 hit tool grades. One was Travis Bizzana, the other was JJ Weatherholtz. So
I was going to say it's closer to a 70 than it is a 6 with Weatherholtz hit tool. Yeah. And you know,
I put a 7 on Tamar Johnson's out of high school, and that one's kind of tormenting me. So putting a 7 on an amateur is a bit scary for me now, but maybe that was my way of fence sitting a little bit. But I agree. I mean, I think just the way he's able to maneuver the barrel and hit to all fields, like his comfort going to the opposite field, going up the middle, and just the timing for him always seems to be on. Like, he just is so balanced and so easy, and he recognizes pitches well. I just think he's gonna hit for tons of average. He walked more than he struck out in his debut. I think he doesn't really chase. He has an excellent eye. I have as much confidence in him hitting as any player in this class. Him and Nick Kurtz and Bizzana, they're all kind of in this grouping for me that I'm like, well, of course they're gonna hit. It's just a matter of what's the power gonna be like, where are they gonna play defensively. And I do have more questions about Weatherholtz defensively. I think he probably is a better fit for second base than shortstop. He played shortstop in his pro debut, and he looked fine at the position. And I think for me, that's where I am a little bit skeptical of Weatherholtz. He always just looks kind of fine at shortstop, and I imagine he'll run into some better defensive teammates. Certainly the shortstop they've got in St. Louis right now is more impactful at the position. I can't imagine Weatherholtz is pushing Mason Wynn off the position anytime soon, but play him there until he has to move. I'd say he can play second or third.
Yeah, I think, not to cut through everything, but like I think he's kind of a no doubt second baseman when all said and done. And I don't really think that's a ding on his profile. Like mm-hmm. everyone's buying the bat here with Weatherholt, and for good reason. And I'm with you. I have all the faith in the world that he's going to hit both for power and average. I just think it's such an impressive offensive profile. But
yeah,
Their class doesn't stop with him, and I think it really only gets started. Well, literally gets started with him. But Brian Holiday was a steady ascender last year throughout his year at Oklahoma State. JUCO guy mm-hmm. was really impressive at Oklahoma State last year. Kind of this bulldog competitor on the mound, really advanced strike thrower. But there's some impressive stuff in there as well. Like it's not going to knock your socks off, but like he's not just this like pitchability nibbler. I mean, the fastball was up to 95, 96 with some life at the top. Gyro slider was effective, but the best pitch in his arsenal is that big sharp downer curveball. That's for me, it's a plus pitch. It gets a ton of whiff. I think getting him in the third is a solid pick. And like you said, there's a little bit of a type here with the hitters, and it's kind of an archetype that you and I are pretty big fans of. It's like guys that have shown a hit tool, mm-hmm. you know, in college and have shown feel to put the bat on the ball and moving the baseball consistently. And Campos fits the billing there in the fourth round catcher out of Arizona State. An arm that I really, really like that they got in the fifth round is Braden Davis from Oklahoma. Kind of this undersized physical lefty, struck out 117 in 92 innings at Oklahoma last year. And I think as far as singular pitches go, his changeup was, I think, one of the best of its kind, at least among college arms. Like it's comfortably plus. Last year at Oklahoma, it generated a 56% whiff rate. It gets great separation off his fastball, averaged over 10 miles an hour off it. Just kind of disappears at the end. It's got plenty of tumble with a little bit of fade to the arm side. His gyro slider is effective against both right and left-handed hitters. It generated, I think, a 42% whiff rate last year and flashed a tick above average. So I think it's a fun pitch mix. And his fastball is up to 95 with some life through the zone. So I really like him as well.
Yeah. I'll touch on another pitcher in this class who's utterly fascinating. That's seventh rounder Andrew Dukanich out of Vanderbilt, AKA the Duke. If we had done a podcast on the draft 2 years ago, Peter, we would have been talking about him a ton in the 2022 class when he was coming out of high school. I think at his best at that time, he showed some of the most impressive pure stuff in the class. Like he was flashing multiple 70s with his fastball and slider, but he really battled some inconsistencies control-wise during his spring draft year. He wound up withdrawing from the class. He ranked as the number 35 prospect in the class before withdrawing, so we had very high expectations for him. And then he barely ever pitched at Vanderbilt. He dealt with some inconsistencies. He continued to battle control. He dealt with some injuries. A hamstring injury in 2024 limited him to just 10.2 innings this spring, one start, four appearances out of the bullpen. He's a bit of a conundrum for me. I don't know exactly like if he'll ever be back to that sort of elite 2022 high school version that he flashed at times. But I'm still enamored with him because I saw that like Dukanich at his best, and I wonder if it's still in there and if a pro organization can help him get back to that. But it's a 92, 94 mile per hour fastball, a mid 80s slider, a slower curveball, low 80s changeup, a good frame. But there are just a lot of question marks. So that $300,000 price tag that he signed for in the seventh round, I think is a testament to like what he's flashed in the past, just given his college track record. So he's fascinating to me. I have no confidence in like what he's going to be moving forward. But I hope it pans out well, because at his best coming out of high school, it was kind of legendary stuff that he was flashing.
Yeah. I mean, I remember even just the buzz, it was pre BA for me, but I remember the buzz, surrounding him even coming out of high school, and it was rather significant and was talked about as this potential day one guy. So I think if, you know, there's really impressive stuff, in the tank, I think the key is just going to be recapturing that form going forward. But like you said, for where they got him, I mean, I think it's it's hard to continue to leave an arm like that on the board for very long, just even given the injury history, the lack of performance. But I think just like talking through some of these arms more and more, like Jack Finley in the eighth is another arm that I like. I know that he's kind of in a similar bucket to Duke Kanish with the injury history, missed all 2024, but had a really impressive start to his 2023 season at Notre Dame. I think it was 54 Ks to 11 walks. It's strikes. He's up to 93, 94 from the left side. He's got a solid feel for a slider. I think just the continued development of a third pitch for him is going to be the key. And then like John Gazdar on day three, like it's comfortably plus bat to ball skills. Impact is a little bit of a question mark, but he's got big time hand speed, good feel for the strike zone. Ian Petrutz fits in a similar bucket to Gazdar where it's like bat to ball skills plus approach, but you've got a little bit more impact with Petrutz, and he had one of the more impressive pro debuts of their draftees in Palm Beach. He hit 344 with six doubles, a triple, walked 17 times to just 10 strikeouts. It's a really good feel for the strike zone. He's got a knack for being on the barrel, and like I said, there's more of this kind of appealing physicalness to his build. He's a little bit more stockier than a guy like Gazdar. It'll be hit over power, but it's not just like just this kind of hit only. Mm-hmm. And then a day three arm that I really, really like and I think is a big time sleeper is Sam Broderson from Louisiana Tech. Two pitch guy, slam dunk reliever all the way, fastball slider, but like both are like, again, I think you can stick a plus on both. And with Broderson's fastball, there's a lot of outlier traits with it, I think. Mm-hmm. He's up to 97. The shape is really interesting. It averaged over 2,400 RPMs, and it averaged over 20 inches of ride with just 4 inches of run. And from this really deceptively low, or excuse me, no, not at all. But just the shape and the traits of it are really interesting. And it's actually not his secondary pitch, but he relies really heavily on his slider. Last year, it generated a 52% whiff rate. Kind of screams like fast mover to me.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned low slot on accident, but I've got an actual low slot lefty who might be intriguing as like a late name to keep in mind. He's actually not even drafted, but an NDFA, Michael Watson, who came out of Sam Houston State and had a really impressive debut with Palm Beach and low A. He appeared in 11 games, finished 13 innings, a 0.68 ERA, 24 strikeouts, 5 walks. It's not the biggest fastball in the world. He averages 90 miles per hour, but it is a lower approach. Or a lower release height, I should say, flat approach angle on the fastball, and a good debut. So that's kind of a fun NDFA already for the Cardinals.
Yeah. Another guy, I guess, not to keep going on and on about the Cardinals, but I think that
St. Louis fans will be thrilled with that, Peter.
Yeah. Like Nolan Sparks, from, I believe it was D2 Rochester. I don't know if they're D2 or D3, but sleeper guy from the University of Rochester, kind of this short and compact physical frame at 5'10", 195, was excellent at Rochester. I think he won the conference's pitcher of the year either in 2024 or 2020, maybe both, but it was at least one of the two. Mm-hmm. Also had a really strong pro debut with St. Louis, out of the bullpen in Palm Beach. Struck out 18 across 15 and a third innings, worked a 2.35 ERA, kind of this sinking fastball with some run and kind of bowling ball life through the zone, is really effective. And then he's got a solid feel for a breaking ball. So, I mean,
yeah,
early returns are really, really positive for a lot of these guys.
And Sparks was also the guy I tagged for most intriguing background in this class. He was class valedictorian from his high school in Colorado. He also finished his career at Rochester as the all-time program leader with 248 strikeouts. So that's a fun one in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. And then I not got to another keep one? On going and going with.
Well, the, I wonder who your favorite draft class is going to be, Peter.
Yeah. And I it's such a bad giveaway, but Josh Cross from Cincinnati didn't have like on paper the greatest pro debut, but I think offensively, it's a potentially intriguing hit power combo. Mm-hmm. Catcher out of Cincinnati. He ran you know, he's got above average bat to ball skills, at least showed it at Cincinnati last year with a zone contact rate of 89%, but there's also impact in there. Posted a max EV of 110 with a 90th of 106. And, you know, catching wise, I think that, you know, they've seemed to have moved him off the position, but at Cincy last year, he had 317 with 19 jacks. The key is just going to be how much he hits, because right now it's looking like a more first base profile, but at least under the hood and what he's flashed, there's some offensive tools there.
Well, it seems pretty obvious that the Cardinals are your favorite draft class in this division. You can expand more on that, but for me, I'm kind of torn. I think JJ Weatherholt might be my single favorite pick of this division, but in terms of overall draft class, I really am finding myself torn between the Reds with Chase Burns, Tyson Lewis, great values that I thought with Luke Holman, and then a trio of Sirota, Stovall, Smith after that. Guys later in the draft like Luke Hayden in the eighth round is a really appealing pick to me. And then with the Pirates, just going with three high upside athletic players from the prep demographic in Connor Griffin, Levi Sterling, Wyatt Sanford. When four of your first five picks are from the high school demographic and three of those are shortstops, I think like inherently that's going to be a draft class that I'm a fan of. And then you've got guys further down the board who have some upside potential in Will Taylor and Gavin Adams. You mentioned both Connor Wheatgreaf and Matt Agier as players that you like. Fewer day three picks that are really intriguing to me for the Pirates, but I think just the, like, even outside of Connor Griffin, who clearly is the most exciting player in this class, like the Levi Sterling and Wyatt Sanford picks for the Pirates in the supplemental first and the second round, I think is going to put that over the top for me. They're just two players that I always found myself really liking. I like chasing upside in the draft. I think it's just fun. It's a lot of athletes. It's a lot of up the middle profiles. And if they can unlock some more with guys like Josh Hartle and Will Taylor and Matt Agier and Gavin Adams, I just think you've got a lot of players that I'm excited about. So I'll go with Pittsburgh. And if you want to expand more on why the Cardinals was the team for you, if it's not already obvious, given the amount of praise you've heaped onto that class, by all means, you can have the finishing comments here.
Yeah, but I think you make a great point with Pittsburgh, who for me is like a pretty close second in terms of classes that I like. I mean, like you said, it's a really high upside, fun, high ceiling type of class that comes with some question marks, just like really anyone with high upside. But like you said, there's a ton to like. There's a lot of up the middle profiles and just kind of fun players in general. But with St. Louis, I think Weatherholt serves as a really good anchor, and I know that you're just as bullish on him as I am. And then just looking up and down the class as a whole, I think that there's just a lot to like on both sides of the baseball. And it is, I think that their pro debuts, even though it's just kind of a flash in the pan, or hopefully not a flash in the pan, you know, even just given the small sample size, I think it is really encouraging to see so many of these guys off to impressive starts. And like, we didn't even really talk about Ryan Campos from Arizona State, who's got comfortably plus bat to ball skills, like 92% in zone contact rate at ASU with a max EV of 111. That came out weird. But like, it's just a really compact and short left-handed swing. It's a super hitterish look in the box. And he had a impressive pro debut in his own right. He had 319 in Palm Beach with eight doubles, walked as much as he struck out, drove in 16 across 26 games. Like, I know that the hit over power profile is kind of not the like prettiest, I think, nowadays. And like, I think it is really important to hit for impact, but you know, you can't get to any sort of impact if you can't put the ball in play and you don't have a feel for the barrel. Like, it's awesome to be a good 3 o'clock hitter, but it's not going to get you anywhere in pro ball. So, not like the biggest group of mashers here, but, like, I think Weatherholt is such a good anchor at the top. Like, it's above average power, it's double plus hit. And then on the mound, like, you've got a, I think, a fun, like, mixed bag of arms as well. So, St. Louis is my favorite class.
Cool. Well, that is the National League Central for us here on the podcast. One more to go on our episode next week. So again, hope you guys all have had a really good Thanksgiving week. Hope you got some time to just take a step back and enjoy some good food and some family time. It's always a really fun holiday. Obviously, it's Thanksgiving. It's a no-brainer. Easy plus-plus holiday at the very least. In terms of like Baseball America and the site, we're continuing to roll out top 10s. I'll mention Ben Badler had his international board for the 2025 international class go up on the site today as we're recording this podcast. So if you're listening and you want to dig into that, by all means, please do. We're going to continue rolling out the top 10s. We're going to continue rolling out these draft podcasts. So plenty to grab your attention and distract you if you are a little bored at work and just want to continue living through baseball, because we don't really have any offseason here at Baseball America, which is phenomenal. So for Peter, I'm Carlos. We'll see you guys next time. So long, everybody.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.